Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you today?
And we're both really, really, really happy. It's April Fool's Day. Where did that tradition come from, Jeff?
I believe it's because April 1st, way back in the early days, was New Year's. And when the calendar changed and New Year's got moved to January 1st, those who kept celebrating it in April were called April Fools.
Are you fooling me?
Okay. I could be. I actually, yeah.
Okay. Anyway, we're the guys that work at the Binary Research Institute, and we explore the idea that ancient civilizations might have known something that we don't know. And in that quest, we interview all sorts of people from all walks of life on interesting phenomena. And today we actually have two guests that have written a very, very interesting book. One of those guests, Marie D. Jones, has been on before. And
she's also spoken at CPAC before.
Right. So most of our listeners will know Marie. And her co-author on her latest book here, their latest book, is Larry Flaxman. And so are you both on there?
I'm here.
Hi, Marie.
Hi.
Larry?
Hi.
Good. Sound quality's okay. So let's just get into it. Marie, since we dealt with your background before, let's go straight to Larry. Can you give us something, Jeff?
Sure. Well, Larry is the founder and president of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies team, and he's been actively involved in paranormal research and investigation for more than 10 years. He's authored many articles and been featured in numerous newspaper, magazine, radio, and television interviews.
Excellent. And just a little on Marie there.
Marie is the author of 2013, The End of Days, or A New Beginning, and many other books, one of my favorites, which is Science, P-S-I-E-N-C-E.
And she's an excellent speaker.
She's an excellent speaker. Right. And she's got an extensive background in metaphysics and studying the paranormal and has appeared on a number of radio shows around the world.
Okay. And you two have written this book called 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomena. And just tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll kind of get into some questions on some of the science and phenomena.
I'll start. Well, Larry and I had just decided to partner in a venture called Para Explorers, and we wanted to write books, and we had an idea that we wanted to go to my original publisher with. When the publisher came to us with this idea of looking into the 1111 phenomenon. And we had no idea that there was a phenomenon. We didn't know that there was anything to this whole thing about time prompts. But we agreed to take it on. And as we got into the research, we were absolutely shocked to find out that not only is this time prompt phenomenon going on all over the world, but that there is much more to the 1111 story than we ever imagined. And that led us into writing a whole book about the mystery and sort of paranormal nature of numbers themselves and how important they are to our lives, how important they were to ancient civilizations, and how they may actually make up the structure of reality.
The structure of reality. That sounds pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So, Larry, now tell us the truth. Why'd you get into this?
Well, the 1111 thing was really, as Marie had kind of alluded to, was really not the first choice that we would have had to write. But when the publisher approached us about doing it, we thought, you know, it might actually be interesting. We thought we would have a huge amount of difficulty finding research material for it. We didn't think that there was as much experiential information out there as we were able to find. We thought that, you know, this is a fairly singular experience. Not many people have had it. I've personally had it a couple of times, and, you know, to me, it's always been
You assumed that it was coincidence.
Yeah, it was more of a coincidence, but also at the same time an annoyance, really. It was just like, oh, well, it's 1111 again. You know, really not reading any type of underground meaning into it at all. So when we started to actually do the research for the book, we were just blown away by the amount of information that was out there. It seems like everybody has had an experience with time prompts, whether it's 1111 or 111 or 222. Everyone has some type of story about a reoccurring number pattern like that, and it was a very interesting book to write. When we were doing the research for the book, we decided that we wanted to write a book that was more than just about just time prompts. We also wanted to do a little education about numbers themselves. And I'm a huge, I wouldn't say not fan of numbers, but it's definitely not my favorite topic. So, and Marie, I think, would agree as well.
Oh, yeah.
We really wanted to come up with something that was interesting for the layperson like us, something that really brought numbers into a more entertaining light. And I think
just
I think, Larry,
we were both math haters.
Absolutely.
I really like the term huge not fan of numbers.
I know. He was trying to be nice there. We're math haters.
Yeah, I didn't really want to go there and say math haters, but yeah. So we really wanted to make it kind of a fun book, and we wanted to inform people about the beauty and the interest of numbers. And it really was. It was very interesting, and it was fascinating finding the information for writing the book.
Okay, so what, in just the most simplistic terms, what is the time prompt phenomenon?
Well,
go ahead, Larry. You take it.
Well, I was going to say the time prompt phenomenon. It's many things, but it's also one thing. It's very simplistic, but it's also very, very complex. It basically, what we believe is, well, let me first define what a time prompt phenomenon is. A time prompt is when someone will look up at the clock at the same. It seems like the same time. On a reoccurring basis, like every time they look at their clock in their car, it's exactly 11:11, or every time they look at the time on their cell phone, it's exactly 2:22, or they wake up at a specific time every night, or it's a pattern of reoccurring numbers, and it could be anything. It could be numbers that follow you in, like I said, in phone numbers, or it could be a clock, cell phone numbers, credit card numbers. Anything that basically follows you around.
Grocery receipts. I mean, we've had people tell us that they've had the same number sequence show up on, you know, they go to the grocery store, there it is. They look on their phone, there it is. They look up at a digital clock, there it is. They look on the computer, there it is. They see a billboard, there it is. So it's not just time, but that seems to be the most prevalent, and that seems to have the most meaning to people. When they continuously wake up at a specific time, and 11:11 is the most popular time prompt that we came across. It's actually a global phenomenon. People in India, people in China, we had people in, you know, Indonesia. So there's something going on with the 11:11.
Okay.
And of course, we were able to find the origin of that particular time prompt, and it has to do with the whole 2012 mythology. And supposedly that on the winter solstice of December 21st, 2012, it will begin at 11:11 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So that was the origin point for that particular time prompt. But what's really neat is that we found people that have been seeing 11:11 30, 40 years ago and continuing to see it. So this isn't something new, but I think Larry will agree, it does seem to be on the increase.
Well, couldn't it mean different things to different people? Do some people actually look for this, maybe subconsciously try to wake up at that
absolutely.
Time?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's one of Larry's favorites, matrix things, which you can explain.
Yeah, it definitely is. And I would add, too, that the 11:11 phenomena has personally affected Marie and I very often. It seems like every time the two of us email each other, it happens to be exactly 11:11. We'll look at the timestamp on the email, and it's exactly 11:11. So, yeah, it is a very individual experience. I mean, different people can read different meaning into their time prompt phenomena. And I think that's really the key, is that you actually will think about it. Many times, like myself being guilty of this, just kind of shrugged it off as being an annoyance or, you know, a coincidence. We didn't really add any type of additional meaning to it. We really didn't think about the numbers. And the time prompt phenomena really, if anything else, it serves to wake us up and it serves to allow us to actually think about things.
Right, you know, whether, pay attention.
Yeah, wake up and pay attention.
But we, you know, I don't know if we have time in this segment, but we actually came up with two very different potential explanations for this. And one is that this is an exterior influence, that we are being prompted to pay attention by some outside force, whether you want to call it your guardian angels, higher intelligence, the universe, God, what have you. And the other theory is that it's our brain seeking out pattern. And once the brain senses, sees something happen more than a few times, it creates that sort of neural pathway where it continues to see that continuously. So you've got this interior influence, you've got this exterior influence, but it might possibly be a little bit of both. But what we did find is that people have had profound meaning that they attach to the time prompts, and that seems to be more important than the time prompt itself. The message is more important than the messenger.
So, for example, when you two find yourself emailing each other at 11:11, I could see that since you're working on this topic, that would be a time that you might consciously try to do.
Did the 11:11 thing for the two of you? Is that something that occurred after you started researching and writing the book, or?
Larry saw it before. I never did. I would wake up at 2:22, 3:33, 4:44 for several nights a week for months. But yeah, I mean, once Larry and I paid attention to this idea, we did begin to see it more and more. My 7-year-old son began to notice it. So yes, we're talking about the brain, you know, and our own consciousness becoming aware of something that might have always been there, but all of a sudden now it has meaning to us. I mean, 11:11 never had any meaning for me until Larry and I got the offer to write this book. So now it has meaning, and therefore I see it much more often.
Right. It's very similar to, if you want to use a example, very similar to if you're shopping for a car and you decide that you want to buy a 4-wheel drive red Jeep, and you want to buy that vehicle because there's not very many of them on the road that you see, and you think that's just going to be the greatest car that you ever own. So you go to the dealership, you finance, you put your you sign your life away, you leave the dealership, and the minute you leave the dealership, that's all you see is 4-wheel drive red
right.
Jeeps.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, they're in front of you and behind you on the freeway all the time.
Is it the case that it's not necessarily that those things don't always happen? It's just that, or other things with other numbers don't happen just as frequently. It's just because that stands out, like the 11:11 stands
Absolutely.
Out that you notice it more. It's just like when
right.
when I'm driving in traffic, I somehow always end up in the slowest moving lane of traffic, and so I would think that somehow that follows me around, but I know that that's not necessarily the case. I'm sure.
Actually,
there's
a law of physics behind that. You need to read Philip Ball's Critical Mass. There's a whole chapter on the physics of traffic. I'm not kidding you. It's one of the best books I've ever read, that there is an actual reason and a law why that happens. Don't ask me to explain it because I don't. You know, I couldn't possibly do it as well as he could.
Well, I mean,
these are things that are always there, but all of a sudden now we're seeing them. And what Larry and I found really exciting about that is that, you know, we work with the paranormal a lot. So is it possible that there's all kinds of information out there that is always there? But until we make that first connection where the brain kicks in and begins to see it, you know, what are we ignoring? What are we not seeing?
Yeah.
Right.
And to kind of follow up a little bit about this, numbers are such an integral part of our lives now. I mean, numbers are every place. I can look around my office here and I can see my clock's got numbers on it, my computer's got numbers, I've got ISBN numbers on books on the shelves, there's calculator, telephone. I mean, everything in our lives revolves around numbers. We have social security numbers, mm-hmm. we've got PIN codes for our ATM machines, we've got numbers, and it's not surprising that numbers would be the first thing that we would subconsciously or unconsciously try to kind of ignore or push out of our lives, because they are so prevalent and they're they're with us all the time. So the 1111 phenomenon, the time prompt phenomena, you're absolutely right. The numbers have always been there, although they do, from what we're seeing, they do seem to be increasing a little bit. But they may have always been there, but we have just tended to ignore them just because, well, it's their numbers.
Well, it's I mean, going back to the traffic analogy, I'm sure I'm not always in the slow lane of traffic. It's just it's just that I don't pay as much attention when I'm not, because
right.
it's not nearly as annoying.
it's
not nearly as annoying to be in the fast moving lane of traffic.
Yeah.
So it's
I've
only those events
with Jeff,
that,
by
that
the
start
way,
out.
And another odd thing about it is it's always slow moving behind him.
Oh, yeah, now we get it.
Oh, you're saying
okay.
I'm a parade maker. Is that what you're saying?
No, but, you know, I think the brain obviously looks for patterns.
It does.
And when we see something like, you know, 1111 or 2222, it's just an easier thing to remember. Isn't that a big part
it's
of the phenomenon?
It's eye-catching, absolutely. I mean, if you woke up at 2:30 every night, or if you woke up at 6 o'clock every morning, big deal. Those are typical times that we tend to notice, the hour and the half hours. Yeah. But 11:11 or 12:12, if you see that over and over, it does seem a little unusual. So the brain is going to notice it. But what's interesting, though, is as much as we talk about the brain and the fact that this could be something totally explicable, you know, that we're doing ourselves, we still were very shocked at the number of people who report increased synchronicities or life-changing decisions or, you know, just at the moment that they were paying attention to a time prompt, having some kind of insight. So it does seem like there's something a little bit deeper going on.
Well, give us one of those stories. What has somebody reported that's unusual and tied to that?
I have a friend named Scott. He's a very famous artist, Scott Westmoreland. I can say his name. He's a very good friend of mine, who kept seeing the same time every time he and his wife conceived a child. And they would have a number of paranormal experiences that were associated with that. A number of synchronistic experiences would happen at the same time that they saw this time on the clock. And so something like that. We had another woman who continuously
How many children does he have, by the way?
I think four. But, you know, I mean, we had a lot of stories of people saying that when they finally started to look at this as something important and pay attention, that same day or maybe that same time, they got an aha moment. And again, like Larry was saying earlier, this could be nothing more than nature's way of saying, you know, get your butt in the present moment and pay attention, because you're not paying attention to your life and you're missing out on synchronicities, you're missing out on opportunities, you're missing out on things that you should be noticing.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, so people then relate something that they see to something important in their life, and is this just the subconscious doing this? Is something we all do, or is this sort of the bigger universe talking to us?
That's a tough one. What do you think, Larry?
Well, it's a very tough one, because I think it's probably a combination of both. I mean, you know, certainly our subconscious is very powerful. It controls pretty much everything. But that begs the question, is there an external influence as well, rather than simply just the internal influence? And I think that there very well may be. You know, science is starting to discover things that, 10 years ago would have been considered heresy. And they're right. Starting to find things now that are not so heretical.
But we did have some reports, too, Larry, of people that saw, like, a guardian angel or felt they were in the presence of a spirit. Now, that didn't happen with everybody we talked to, but probably a small percentage were able to say that they felt like they were in the presence of something at that moment they noticed the time prompt.
Well, right now we're in the presence of an upcoming commercial break. So we will, you're listening to The Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. We are talking with Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman, the co-authors of 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, The Meaning Behind Mysterious Signs, Sequences, and Synchronicities. Sounds good stuff. You were talking about some specific examples of what this means to people's lives. And as I'm thumbing through the book here, I noticed you have the dollar bill there.
Yeah,
So
the back of the... Is it a dollar or a $100 bill?
Oh, it's a $100
bill. $100, yes. I don't see those too often.
So what's on the back there? What is that?
Well, if you count those windows, not the doors, but the windows on either side of the main, I guess you could call it, tower. There's 11 windows on each side. This is Independence Hall, by the way. And that was actually pointed out to me by Dr. Bob Hieronymus, who wrote a book called The United States of Symbolism. And his whole book is about the symbolism in Washington, D.C., and he talks a lot about sacred geometry and numbers, too. So he shared that with me, and I thought, wow, I never heard that before, but count them, and it's true.
Well, our founders...
Who knows?
Our founders were Rosicrucians and fairly esoteric.
And Masons, absolutely.
Right.
And if anything, Masons understood that numerology and numbers had a mysterious nature and a very profound nature.
And they tried to lay things out that way. So.
And we've all seen National Treasure and National Treasure 2.
That's right. Well, yeah. I saw the first one. But after this new movie, Nicolas Cage is in Knowing, again, it's numbers and number sequences that predict disasters and assassinations and whatnot. So
right.
It's obviously something that's on people's minds.
I just saw that myself. It was pretty good, actually.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was good. It was back in the 50s. It was a time capsule, and it looked just like the school I went to in the 50s. And most kids just put in drawings of what the future would be like. And one little girl put in a sequence of numbers. And he plays a mathematician, MIT. And, of course, his brain just gets going when this is dug up 50 years later.
Right.
And he finds a pattern in it. At first, you know, he thinks, it's just got to be coincidence.
Oh, of course. And
then it turns out to be something much more. So that's kind of what you guys are doing here. I'm sure you thought this stuff, well, you mentioned you thought it was just some coincidence at first, and then as you did the research, you found out that it has significant meaning.
Well, I don't think Larry or I really understood how numbers, you know, what an important part they have been to ancient civilizations. Pythagoras believed that all is number. You know, when we were talking about it, we just really were in awe of the research that we were doing and what we were finding out. We both knew about sacred geometry and numerology and all that kind of stuff, but we didn't realize that there was such a scientific respect for numbers as well as a metaphysical respect. And we've sort of forgotten that today because we're so focused on numbers now for just survival, like Larry was talking about, your PIN number, your Social Security number. But we forget the more profound nature of those very same numbers.
Yeah. I wonder, is it numbers or is it we interpret things via numbers, like a Fibonacci sequence? You find this all throughout nature. And then, of course, we have sort of found that it's specific ratios.
Right. But again, I mean, who, you know, it sort of implies that there's a master mathematician up there or out there that is coming up with such precision and intricacy. Nature is filled with intricacy, and everything seems to be measured just perfectly. One of the chapters in the book that we wrote about was the just six numbers theory, the idea that the universe itself can be whittled down to six different mathematical sequences or numbers or mathematical laws, and that if any of those were to be changed ever so slightly, poof, or, you know, the Big Bang would have gone pop instead. I mean, we wouldn't be here.
If gravity were even like 0.00001% different, the universe couldn't exist.
Exactly. So obviously, numbers are important. But, you know, again, it begs the question, who thought this stuff up? We hear that math is the language of the universe. Well, who spoke the language first? Who came up with all this?
Right. And speaking of six, sexagesimal system was common to the Mesopotamian culture, Babylonian culture.
Right.
Interesting. Hey, Larry, I noticed... So you're the founder and president of the Arkansas Paranormal and Anomalous Studies Team, ARPAST. What exactly are you doing over there?
We are a scientific research organization that focuses primarily on investigating paranormal phenomena, not ghost hunters per se. We are an actual legitimate scientific entity that researches unknown phenomena. Well, actually, we primarily analyze environmental conditions that may be prescient to paranormal events. So we're not actually specifically looking for ghosts. We're looking at what changes at the quantum level within the environment that may be immediately preceding a paranormal event.
And so...
What types of paranormal events?
Anything that's reported. I wouldn't say anything. Legitimate reports, I should say, of paranormal phenomena. You know, things moving, people seeing things, having something a little bit more than just a purely psychological reaction, where there's actually some type of physical or believed to be physical manifestation. So we utilize a little over $250,000 worth of equipment. We are the best-funded research organization in the country, bar none.
For paranormal research.
For paranormal research, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't... You wouldn't be able to compare us with a ghost hunting group, per se. I mean, we've gone way beyond simple.
No, they're very, very scientifically oriented.
But, yeah, that's what we do. And that's actually how I ended up meeting Marie, was that I read her book, Science. And, of course, her book, Science, is an excellent book, as you guys know, and lots of relevance to the paranormal field. Read the book. I was very impressed with it. Emailed her and told her, you know, good job on the book, and we quickly became friends.
Yeah, and of course, your field involves a lot of statistical studies.
Tremendous amount. Yeah, we do a lot of graphing, a tremendous amount of data capture and analysis. We utilize the scientific method very strictly. So, yeah, the numbers part of it definitely kind of ties in with what we were doing with 1111. Now, that doesn't mean that I like numbers, because I still don't. But it's definitely an important part of what we do, and it definitely, you know, adds credence to the book, I think.
Okay, well, hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. Okay, so what did ancient cultures know about numbers? Or I should say, Marie, sort of what part of your research here interfaced with ancient cultures? Because that's our main interest here on the show.
Right. Well, we went in two different directions. We have a chapter that is devoted strictly to the history of numeric sequences and number systems, and how each civilization came up with their own system and how they eventually merged into the system that most of us use today. So we talk about the Egyptian, the Sumerian, the Chinese, Mayan numeric systems that began very crudely and then developed over time. We talk about the Indo-Arabic system, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, that we use today. So that chapter particularly focuses on the history, but probably more interesting for your listeners is the research we did in sacred geometry, which talks about how ancient civilizations were very much, they had a very strong understanding of the relationship between the heavens and earth, and how if you built something on earth that was aligned with the heavens, it increased its power. It had a special meaning. So they built a lot of temples and monuments and megaliths to a very precise measurement. Sometimes the measurement was in alignment with astronomical alignments that they saw, like the pyramids, for example.
Right.
And they had this really intricate understanding of that, that today when we have architecture, when people build things today, that's not even a consideration. I mean, today it's more about getting as much, you know, as many condos as you can into one square mile, whereas our ancient civilizations, it was all about meaning. And when you build something, how can you build upon that relationship between heaven and earth?
That's true. I remember when I was younger, down in San Diego, the Salk Institute is built. The plaza in between the two buildings is built so that this little stream aligns perfectly with the equinoxes, with the, where the
right.
sun sets over the ocean. And I remember when I found that out, I was so fascinated by the fact, by the idea that someone would build a building just to align it to the sun. And this was before I knew that ancient cultures kind of did this all the time.
Right, exactly.
Right. And it tells you, you know, numbers are very important today. You know, how many square feet can you get on that lot? What rents can you get to maximize this building? But versus sort of the coordinates that were of interest to the ancients are, yeah, equinoxes, solstices, how does it fit with the lay of the land? And they'd often line things up as they are to mirror the heavens.
Right, and they also believe that there were lines of power, whether you want to call them ley lines or power lines or dragon lines along the earth, where if you aligned a particular monument, it would increase the power within that. Also, it might even change the level of consciousness to the people that were there. They could have been places of worship, and they were very much aware that there are, and in the paranormal field, we call them hot spots, that there are hot spots on the earth where maybe the veil between worlds is a little bit thinner. And those were locations for maybe places like Stonehenge, as well as aligning it with astronomical events. They could have really been feeling something coming from the land itself. But again, only the best of architects today care about the aesthetics of their buildings. Everybody else is in it for money and how much rent they can get per square mile. But there are great architects that still consider the beauty and aesthetic value of what they're building.
Yeah, well, I think it's all about value, and that I happen to find beauty and synergies with celestial phenomena more valuable than other things.
Well, absolutely.
But we all need to eat too, don't we?
So. Right, and most people just don't think that way.
Yeah.
To them, it's not important.
Yeah.
It should be, but
I was just meeting with a group of people that have attended CPAC for several years. We just had lunch up in Long Beach, and we were talking about that very same thing, how so many of the ancient structures were designed to reflect sort of heavenly coordinates. Or we were talking about the round towers in Ireland, and how if you plot those on a map, it shows a pattern that if you then hold it up to the sky will look almost identical to the major constellations in the northern hemisphere.
Right.
So some ancients were really thinking about these things.
And what a shame that we don't do that today. I mean, we have become such an anxious, depressed, sick species because our focus has shifted from living in places that have that kind of magic and power to just, like I said, just sheer survival, and we've lost touch with that part of ourselves. And I think that that's a shame, that when we find a place to live, we're not looking for a place that really makes our soul feel good as much as our pocketbook.
And this, hey, I just had a good thought. Maybe this is why so many people choose to embrace a number like 2012. You know, we really know very, very little if that has any real meaning whatsoever.
Absolutely.
There's just one Stella that talks about it. But I do run into a lot of people that are kind of hoping for changes and then therefore sort of grasping onto a date, and just like we did for, year 2000.
Right. And Larry and I have had so many emails from people reaching out to us asking if we could help them to find meaning in this. So you're absolutely right. People are grabbing on to whatever they can as that sort of life jacket, because they're coming to realize that everything they've been focusing on has been the wrong things. So the 11-11 could be the wake-up call saying, hey, you know, your life's not working. Hello.
Yeah, or maybe people have the thought before that, I want to change, I need a change, and therefore, this must have some meaning to me.
Right, exactly.
And then they look for it again and again.
But if it works, I say, hey, go for it.
I'm with you there.
Good. Yeah.
Well, we're speaking today with Marie D. Jones and Larry Flaxman, the authors of the new book 11-11, The Time Prompt Phenomena, which I'm sure is available on Amazon and most of the major bookstores. And you're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Okay, as I'm thumbing through the book here, you've got some really neat quotes in here. One is from Galileo, who said, "The great book of nature can be read only by those who know the language in which it was written. And this language is mathematics."
Uh-huh.
And that's your intro to an intriguing chapter, which you call, "Is God a Number?" What's that about?
Well, I think after Larry and I did all this research, you know, where you have guys like Pythagoras saying that all is number, and you realize that most of the great minds agreed that mathematics is indeed the language of the universe, you want to ask that question, well, who or what is behind this all? Can God be whittled down to a particular number? And, you know, in my opinion, no, I think God is all number. And, you know, obviously everything falls under God, including the language, the mathematics. But there certainly are people out there trying to find a God number. There are physicists and mathematicians that think that they can come up with some kind of ratio that describes creation itself. Nobody has achieved that yet. But maybe the question is God not, is God a number, but is God all number?
Well, he's a really, really humble guy. So he's,
or does God have a number?
I think, according to Douglas Adams, the number is 42.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, or he took a pi for himself because it's such an odd number.
I really like the Rubik's Cube thing where you know, they came up with this God number based on the amount of turns it would take to solve a Rubik's Cube. I mean, whoever would have thought? But it makes sense. If God is all-knowing, he, she, it would be able to solve Rubik's Cube in as few turns as possible. But, again, it's just such a profound question with probably a profound answer that we don't have.
I'd have to ditto that. So what sort of other areas does your work take you into? What other things are you doing?
Gosh, we're doing a lot of stuff. Marie, where do we start?
Well,
we have so many projects in the pipeline.
Well, the reason why we formed Paraexplorers is Larry, with our past, has a certain charter of what he does, of the research that they do. And we wanted to break out of that and do other things, so we formed Paraexplorers really to look at, to research, to write about, to teach about all of the unknown mysteries, both ancient and modern. And we're kind of going in so many different directions. Our next book, which is out in August, The Resonance Key, gets into vibration, consciousness, resonance, the idea that reality is structured like a grid, and we refer to it as the zero-point grid. Looks like we're going to be doing a book on deja vu and those types of experiences and whether they are psychological or have a much more profound meaning behind them. But we also are thinking a little bit outside of the box, and that's something that Paraexplorers really wants to do. We want to explore the world and then tell everybody what we found.
That's a fun thing to do. As you get into the subject of resonance, you'll have to really explore celestial mechanics. That's a key principle there, obviously. You know,
it's amazing, again, when we got into resonance, it's just like with 11-11, we had no idea how many different tangents we would go off in and how much it was associated with so many different things, including the paranormal. We always seem to manage to find, you know, some way to bring the paranormal and the unknown into what we're researching.
Yeah. Yeah, the planets get into, and moons have to sort of get into certain resonance.
Right.
Which we, you know, see as number ratios. Just
like there goes the numbers again.
Yeah. otherwise, everything sort of run into each other or spin off and not hold together very well anymore.
Well, this is what we found with resonance, is that it's more than just things that vibrate and sync or, you know, match up and have coherence. It, there's actually something to resonance that we think, Larry and I really feel, can affect the quality of all of our lives.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. We've got just about 3.5 minutes left. One of the things that I meant to ask earlier, and I wanted to kind of just touch on with you, because you both have a lot of experience in paranormal research, is how did you originally get involved in it?
Oh my gosh, Larry, you go first.
Well, I actually don't have any kind of seminal story to tell you. My interest in the paranormal and in the unknown has really spanned my entire life. I've always been interested in unknown or forbidden knowledge, you know, whether it's UFOs or Bigfoots or ghosts, ancient Egyptology. I've always just had a burning desire to research and to find answers for myself for those things. So I think the paranormal side of that really has only come within the past couple of years. As I've started to get older, I've started obviously to realize the limits of my own mortality and my desire to know, is there something else? You know, once we shuffle off of this this existence, is there something else to look forward to? So that's really what has kind of pushed me into the whole paranormal or unknown aspect of our work.
Yeah, I
and
wonder.
My story is the same. I mean, I can remember being 3-4 years old and, you know, telling my mom that I saw UFOs and Bigfoot, and I was always telling ghost stories. I've got a recording. It's ancient, reel to reel, which says something about my age, where the moon landing is going on in the background, believe it or not, and I'm talking over the moon landing, this historical moment in time. I'm telling a ghost story. Yeah. For me, it's the same thing. It's always been there, and I grew up with a father who's a scientist. I had hard science, and I had a mom who was very imaginative, told stories all the time. So I got to walk that line between the two worlds, and it just was something that was always there. There was no seminal event that occurred that I can even remember.
Well, you do a nice job of blending the two in your books.
Thank you.
Larry, I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
So after all this interest and study, then, are you sort of a believer there that there's things happening that aren't explained by the current laws of physics?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier in the show, science is finding things out now that, you know, 10 years ago you would have burned at the stake for even mentioning. And there are so many unknowns about our world. There are so many unknown things about our what we perceive to be our reality that absolutely I think that there are things beyond our cardinal senses that definitely would show that there is something else, that there is an existence beyond. And if you think about from the classic laws of physics, the first and second laws in thermodynamics, our bodies are energy, and you can't create or destroy energy. So the energy upon our death, or the death of our physical body, I should say, that energy has to go someplace. Now, whether the energy is, you know, whether it has some type of a sentient consciousness to it or not, I think is a whole other discussion. But yes, I definitely do. I think.
Well, you're right. It's a whole other discussion, and maybe we'll have to have you back for that. So thanks, you two, for being on.
Oh,
listening,
you're so
to
welcome.
Cosmic Influence. Well, thanks to Marie and Larry for being on the show. That was very fascinating. The time just flew by.
It really did.
And I want to thank all of you out there for listening to The Cosmic Influence. Jeff and I have a lot of fun doing this. And also invite you to the conference on Procession Ancient Knowledge. It's our annual event where a lot of like-minded people get together and really explore subjects like this and things that have to do with ancient cultures and what they knew.
And if you're interested in learning more about the work that Walter and I have done, please pick up a copy of Walter's book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, which is available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and other sites throughout the internet.
Or our film, The Great Year, narrated by James Earl Jones. And in the meantime,
bring on the higher ages.